Got a quote for you. It involves this Paula Abdul stuff, and you probably care even less about this than I do. The only thing that would marginally make this a story was that there are tens of millions of dollars at stake, and if we had an attorney general, Fox could be held liable for rigging a contest that's potentially worth tens of millions of dollars. I wasn't old enough, but in the 50s, they had a big game show scandal. Might have been the $64,000 question or something. I think Dick Clark might have been involved. But they fed the answers to the contestant. And then people marvel at, oh my God, he's so smart. He knew that answer. Oh, he knew this answer. Oh my God, he's so smart. He knew. And so people started watching. And of course, they made more money advertising. And then it turns out that they were feeding the guy answers. And it became known as the big game show scandals of the 50s. I guess payola is part of that. Maybe Dick Clark was involved in that. He's involved in something. But yeah, you're not supposed to give a DJ or a manager of a radio station wads of $100 bills or ounces of cocaine to play your records. That's all kind of the same scandal here. Anyway, if Paula Abdul was found to be guilty of sleeping with a contestant and giving him advice how to win, et cetera, Fox could end up paying the fine for that. So Fox needs to nip this in the bud, as Barney would say. And I ran across a quote that I think you might find ironic. Okay, where do we start here? We'll start with, judges may offer opinions, but viewers vote using their own objective criteria, and it is the voters who ultimately determine each season's American Idol, said some dude. Which is technically true, but if the three of them stand there and say, dude, you suck, you can't sing at all, he's probably not going to win. And, I mean, I say this, I don't know, I don't watch the show. And on the other hand, if they say, you are a spectacular talent, welcome to Hollywood, you're going to be a superstar, I can't wait to buy your albums, odds are that's going to hold a little bit of weight with somebody, especially if they're undecided. If they're voting for looks, you know, this one's cuter, let's vote for him, maybe it won't sway. But if it's down to this guy or that guy, you're more likely to go with the winner. That's why they outlawed projecting election winners while the polls were open. Because with people here, everybody's going this way, they'll stay at home. So let's not act like there's no effect of having the judges or the commentators' opinions involved. But here's the quote I wanted you to hear. Apparently the guilty fellow here is named Clark. Corey Clark. He's the scumbag who, now that he has a book and a record coming out, now it's important that he set the record straight about season two. Well, here we are in season four. Dude, you know, you like those people that saw Michael Jackson molesting little kids. If you didn't pick up a phone and dial 911, we suspect you now coming forward in some cases 10, 12 years later saying, yeah, I witnessed a crime. Well, gee, the guy's in his 40s now and he's a fireman. Why didn't you come to his aid when he was a defenseless little kid? Anyway, this Clark guy you can't really trust these guys. Bart's law number two, he made a big mistake. He's going to make money from it. That ought to be a crime. Anyway, this Clark guy says, quote, she didn't do nothing but have sex. Now, executive producer Nigel Lithgow, in an interview broadcast on Fox affiliate, said, I was rather disappointed with the shoddy journalism in last night's special, the Paula Abdul Corey Clark special. You ready for this? Are you sitting down? I don't think it's good enough to take just one person's allegations. To me, the whole thing sort of stank. Now, are you getting up off the floor? The spokesman for Fox doesn't think it's good enough to take just one person's allegation and make a big deal out of it. Because this is American Idol, and it's important. But when it's something as trivial as changing the elected leader of the free world, well, then any giant nose tramp from Arkansas who needs money, who wants to be an actress in Hollywood, who wants Linda Bloodworth Thomason to cast her in some sitcom, she's got a claim. Do a lot of people know that? Her first round of negotiations, she wanted, I think, $400,000 and some Hollywood jobs. She asked Harry Thomason and Linda Bloodworth Thomason, can you get me on some TV shows or something? Because I want to be an actress. I only have a 9-foot nose. I'm a natural for Hollywood. You know, Paula, when she finally had the nose job, she didn't get just the nose job. She got the entire rhinoplasty. That's what they call it in Paula Jones's case, because she had a nose like a rhino. But that's what she wanted. That's what the blackmail attempt. And why the fuck did anybody but me call it blackmail? She said, hey, I got a claim against the president, and I want $400,000 in a fancy Hollywood job, or I'm filing a lawsuit. She wasn't going to go away until she got... So finally, they decided, the White House decided, and I can't speak for them, but this is why I remember it, that it would be better for them to pay her and make this go away than to go through months or years more of this, you know... Good evening, this is CBS News. We're going to talk about Clinton's cock for 30 minutes, and then a special at 7, the presidential cock. Does it lean left or right? And then at 8, it's Judy Woodruff with the president's cock, in or out. And then at 9, it's the roundtable. What will President Clinton's cock do after you... You know, it was just nonstop. And so at some point they decided maybe it'd be best to pay her and make it go away than to stay on the subject till the end of time. And then Paula said, oh, okay. And then that, who is that... Susan Carpenter McHorr, I think was her name. She said, no, we're not accepting a settlement in this case. We want to go to trial because she was making a big name, lots of money. Everybody send me money. We're so Bill Clinton. We hate Bill Clinton. Send me money. I hate Bill Clinton. I hate Bill Clinton as much as you. If you hate Bill Clinton, send me money. We're all going to get President Clinton. Send me money. So they made lots of money. All those guys did. Now the spokesman from Fox saying, I don't think it's good enough to take just one person's allegations. To me, the whole thing sort of stinks. Well, how about that? If it's Bill Clinton, one person's unfounded allegations are plenty enough. If it's anyone besides Bill Clinton, why, there's no reason to go there. There's no proof. Show me some proof. Amazing the difference that D behind a fellow's name makes. Sent me an email. It didn't get published, but they basically said, Bart, why weren't you on that plane flying at the White House story a little more? You kind of barely mentioned a little bit of it, but truth is, that one just got by me. I think it was hard at work doing radio that day, so I had to have the TV, if not off, at least down. Wasn't like I was able to monitor the news while I speak into the microphone. To this day, I still don't know a lot about it, but I wanted to put my opinion on the record because I'm afraid I might side with the Republicans a little bit on this one. And I wanted to see if you liberals, if you Democrats, had any good reason why you shouldn't. Why is it so damn hard for a pilot to understand that you don't get to fly next to the Washington Monument, the Capitol Building, the Pentagon, the White House? Is that so hard to figure out? It takes a lot of money and a lot of brains and a lot of training and a lot of months or years before you get to sit in that cockpit alone. And they can't figure out that you can't fly over the White House? Why is that? What is wrong with these idiots? If you can't learn that, they should take their pilot's license away forever. There should be, I think that ought to be a serious crime. I think it ought to be a mandatory 5 or 10 years in prison. You never, ever get anywhere near a plane ever again as long as you live. Maybe they should force the pilots to get millions of dollars worth of insurance. So every month they got to pay out a couple of $100, maybe just for the East Coast pilots. But why in the hell can't these pilots figure out that you don't get to fly there? I don't know much about flying a plane. If you're a pilot and you got good reason why they're always flying off course, or they're always blind, or they never know where they are, well, then tell me about that. But I can't think of a good reason. From what I know about flying a plane, it's a little like someone saying you can't drive on 15th Street. And if you just drive down 15th Street and say, oh, is this 15th Street? I didn't know. Well, that's not good enough. To get your license, let's say, you have to sign a document saying, I will not drive on 15th Street. I mean, I assume when a pilot gets his license renewed, they explain to you that there's a thing called restricted airspace. And I think I heard my good friend Randy Rhodes saying she didn't like the way the government got heavy-handed on these guys or whatever. She was saying how, think how awful it is when you get pulled over by a cop. Can you imagine what it's like to have an F-15 pull up next to you and shoot some flares? And apparently it's not scary enough because this guy thought he'd risk it. Please, someone explain to me. How stupid is a pilot? If you can't figure out what the Washington Monument is, and you don't know what the Capitol looks like, and you can't figure out anything about the Pentagon or the White House, you can't fly a plane. I'm sorry. You need to get a job pushing a broom, something that can't blow up and murder the President of the United States. It just seems like it's not that hard. It's not that much to ask a pilot. Stay the hell away. Doesn't a pilot have a map? Am I just imagining things? Seems to me like you got an airport here and you got an airport there. And you got to fly between the two. And why the hell can't you stay on course? What are they masturbating up there? Are they reading books? Are they drinking? Are they playing poker? Are they watching a DVD movie? Why the hell can't a pilot stay anywhere near on course? The way I remembered, he was going from somewhere in Pennsylvania to North Carolina or something. And if that takes you over the White House, well, guess what, Sparky? It's time to steer away. Isn't there a thing called a flight plan? Why don't they have to follow the flight plan? I just think, if nothing else, maybe this, you know, I'm not saying we have to hang these two guys, but can't we make this, the, you know, it's like the runaway bride. We didn't get to that because who cares, but the idea, did you know she had 14 bridesmaids? Stupid. 14 times. You don't have the governor's ball if you're not too sure about what you're doing. Why the hell? Like I said, everybody should get married in Vegas. That's what it's there for. Well, not really, but we'll say that is. But there's just no reason in this whole world to have 14 bridesmaids and how many thousands of 30, 40, 50, 60, I don't know what a wedding costs in Louisiana, wherever the hell's Georgia, wherever she's from, but 14 bridesmaids, that sounds like a band, a party, a big rental hall, probably $1,000 for the cake, you got the photographer, you got the flowers, you're probably helping with hotels, and I mean, you idiot, don't do that. Anyway, it's the same thing with that runaway bride and this pilot. Maybe we don't have to hang the... I think the runaway bride owes that money, but we can't really ruin the rest of her life by telling her, yeah, you got to give the state $60,000 or $80,000 or $100,000 that she doesn't have. Now, if she's got it, that's one thing. Like with bankruptcy, I don't think breaking her is a good idea. Telling her she's got to pay back $100,000 over the rest of her life. You know, hell, she might just shoot herself. But you serve notice right now. From now on, they should make the point very plain. If you ever, ever call a cop and give them a false statement from now on, after the runaway bride, May 2005, starting now, if you file a false report, you're going to do time, you're going to pay the money back or whatever, that you know, just lay. Same with the pilot. We used this recent D.C. stuff as the starting point. Don't you think every pilot in the country has heard that story now? I think I was probably the only guy that missed it. But if I flew a plane, I'd be damn interested when I'd see these guys getting out of a plane and kneeling on the tarmac and all these FBI guys putting guns to their heads. If you can't figure out that the airspace above the White House is wrong, is somewhere where you can't fly, then you can't be a pilot anymore.
Tonight, you're going to hear for the first time from a soldier who spent 3 months in the interrogation rooms at Guantanamo Bay, Cuba. The story that Sergeant Eric Saar tells paints a picture of bizarre, even sadistic treatment of detainees in the American prison camp. A lot of what you're about to hear is difficult to listen to and maybe even harder to believe.
These are among the most dangerous, best-trained, vicious killers on the face of the earth.
And with that in mind, Sergeant Saar went to work, but was surprised by what he found.
How many do you think were what we were told were the worst of the worst, real terrorists?
At best, I would say there were a few dozen.
A few dozen?
A few dozen.
Out of 600?
Yes.
Who are the rest of these guys?
Some of them were conscripts who actually were forced to fight for the Taliban, so actually had taken up arms against us, but had little or no choice in the matter.
You know, when I first heard this, I thought about our new Pope. When they said he was a member of the Hitler Youth, a lot of people said, oh, come on now, that was compulsory. He had to join. He didn't want to do that. They made him join. And wait till you hear what we're doing to the guys in Cuba who were in the same position as the Pope.
Some of them were individuals who were picked up by the Northern Alliance, and we have no idea why they were there. And we didn't know exactly what their connections were to terrorism.
However they got there, SAR and the rest of Guantanamo's intelligence personnel were told that the captives were not prisoners of war and therefore were not protected by the Geneva Convention. Your training in intelligence had told you what about the Geneva Conventions?
That they were never to be violated. As a matter of fact, the training for interrogators themselves, their entire coursework falls under the umbrella of you never violate the Geneva Conventions.
And here we got this never-elected monkey in charge of us now, disregarding the Constitution, ripping up treaties, disregarding the Geneva Convention. My God, the whole country had just gone nuts and nobody cares. Listen to what they're doing to these poor bastards down at Gitmo with your tax money and my tax money.
Sergeant Sarr told us some U.S. military intelligence personnel used cruelty and even bizarre sexual tactics against the prisoners. He told us about one interrogation in particular, in which he translated for a female interrogator who was trying to break a high-priority prisoner, a Saudi, who'd been in flight school in the United States.
You know, another small problem. When I was in the finance business, we were always doing loan business with Saudi pilots. Yes, the 9/11 people were Saudi pilots, but personally, I've known dozens, maybe 25 or 30 Saudi pilots. The idea that you're from Saudi Arabia and you're a pilot, so we're going to torture you, that just don't sit real good with me.
As she stood in front of him, she slowly started to unbutton her army blouse. She had on, underneath the army blouse, a tight brown army t-shirt. Touched her breasts and said, "Don't you like these big American breasts?" She wanted to create a barrier between this detainee and his faith. And if she could somehow sexually entice him, he would feel unclean in an Islamic way. He would not be able to pray and go before his God and gain that strength. So maybe the next day he would be able to start cooperating and start talking to her.
But he wasn't talking. So Sarr told us the interrogator increased the pressure.
She started to unbutton her pants and reached and put her hands in her pants and then started to circle around the detainee. And when she had her hands in her pants, apparently she used something to put what appeared to be menstrual blood on her hand, but it in fact was ink. When she circled around the detainee, she pulled out her hand, which was red, and said, "I'm actually menstruating right now, and I'm touching you. Does that please your God? Does that please Allah?" And she then took the ink and wiped it on his face and said, "How do you like that? Have fun trying to pray tonight while there's no water in your cell." She was going to have the water turned off in his cell, so he then could not go back and become ritually clean. So he then, therefore, could not pray.
We also asked Colonel Lang to review some of the written statements of prisoners who claimed to have been beaten.
But if people were really beaten and kicked and knocked around and their heads beaten against the floor and had deprived of treatment for broken bones and teeth resulting from this, if these things really happened, in fact, to me, that's a lot more serious than this silliness with having these girls go in and rub themselves all over these prisoners.
Doesn't it seem a little strange that a fellow like John McCain, who was tortured for 5 years, is okay with this? And it's also strange that while McCain was in captivity, they operated on his, I guess it was arms, he had broken bones, and they put him in surgery to repair his broken bones. And apparently our boys at Gitmo are not as nice as the North Vietnamese were. And here we were, again, America decided to show up in Vietnam and bomb their cities. We had B-52s flying over like flocks of birds, carpet bombing, one after another, B-52s, one after another. Here comes another flock of B-52s dropping thousands and thousands of tons of bombs. And then when they caught some of the pilots, they performed surgery on them. But no, we don't do that in America.
Is all of this torture?
Yeah, I think it's torture.
Interrogations were set up so the VIPs could come and witness an interrogation. And in fact, the interrogation would be a mock interrogation. They would find a detainee that they knew to have been cooperative. They would ask the interrogator to go back over the same information they reviewed on whatever date they had previously interrogated the detainee, and they would sit across a table and talk as though you and I are talking. And this was a fictitious world that they would create for these VIP visits, because in fact, that's not what generally took place in Guantanamo Bay.
They staged these interrogations?
Yes, sir. They staged the interrogations.
As a professional soldier and someone who dedicated his life to the service of the United States, in fact, to think that the United States would stoop to such tactics as this, I find to be a disgraceful thing.
Well, let's move on to your website, hotmilitarystud.com. I didn't make that up. You wrote, "I don't leave marks, only impressions." I'm just saying, if this had happened during the Clinton White House, if there was someone who had this in his past, who was now working in the Clinton White House with rather dubious credentials under a false name, don't you think they would have made a bigger thing of it under a Democratic administration? Don't you think the Republicans would have been... Stop it! Don't you think the Republicans would have been all over that?
Well, I don't know the answer to that, but usually the way it works is people become reporters before they prostitute themselves.
Ah! Touché, Mr. Jeff Gannon.
Quite a night in Washington, D.C. Joining us now, our senior White House correspondent, Stephen Colbert. Stephen actually attended the White House Correspondents' Dinner.
Yes.
First off, what are the purpose of these correspondents' dinners, if you would?
Well, John, particularly in recent years, the correspondents' dinner has served as a night of genial detente for the press and the White House. A chance for each side to say to the other, you know what? Deep down, we're both entrenched oligarchies with a stake in the survival of the status quo. Enjoy your scrod, old buddy. Enjoy your scrod.
First Lady Laura Bush.
Yes.
Actually, not only very funny, but I thought a bit ribald, cheeky,
John,
if you
what
will.
You saw was the early show, the one they do for the cameras. I was there for the midnight show when the cameras get turned off and the First Lady felt free to speak her filthy, filthy mind.
That's very... She did two shows?
Oh, yes, John. In fact, I snuck in this little recording device.
You're kidding.
No, I am not. That horse joke you mentioned? Get the kids out of the room, Mom. Because here's how she told it after hours.
I'm proud of George. He's learned a lot about ranching since that first year when he tried to milk the horse. What's worse, it was a male horse. And what's even worse than that, he knew it was a male horse. He specifically said, "Bring me a stallion with the biggest you can find." You know what? Bring me two. Because I want to off one horse while I'm off another. And I don't want to stop until I'm bathing in a bucket of horse.
All right, Stephen, that is enough. That is enough. I do not want to hear that. That is enough. That is enough. Wow. My eyes are burning.
Solid material, John.
That is honestly too much.
Yeah, John, she said things that made Dick Cheney blush. And that guy used to eat scrambled eggs off a hooker's chest.
Actually, I believe you're thinking of Frank Sinatra used to do that.
All right, Cheney used to use egg beaters.
Gentry on Air Atlanta.
Randy.
Hello.
I'm all the plump.
I know, I know. It's exciting, isn't it?
I got to tell you something funny that happened.
Mm-hmm.
It's true, too.
All right.
Okay. Wednesday, Rush Limbaugh was blasting Hillary.
For what?
I'll read the quote.
Okay.
There's a bunch of the news channels showed Hillary walking out all calm, cool, and collected. Everybody else around her was running for their lives, and Hillary was just taking her time and walking out. Now, the Democrats have started to say, if you've been watching any cable news, paying any attention, you're starting to hear just a little bit of rumbling about this, and it's going to grow louder as the day goes on.
What, that she was calm?
Well, yeah.
That's bad. Hillary, why don't you get crazy like Nancy and get lifted out of your shoes?
Yeah, he says, we need leadership. Did you see the way Mrs. Clinton calmly and coolly, collectively walked out of there? This was Wednesday. Yesterday, I turn him on, and he's blasting her over the same thing. So I call his show, and I get on. And I says, Rush, thanks for taking my call. Just to let you know, you do let liberals on. Because I've been on her a couple other times, too. I says, but you're really upset with Hillary, and I don't understand that. I said, what did you want her to do, imitate Bush and sit there and read My Pet Goat in a Time of Crisis? Click.
He hung up on you for that.
I got that off Bartkop.
Oh, Bartkop's great.
Oh, he is.
I love Bartkop.
He is something.
Yeah, he's good.
Getting it on with a Saudi prince, it does have its advantages. First of all, they have plenty of lubrication. And when you're done, there's always a towel handy.
I spent a lot of time chasing tail.
This, maybe you weren't aware of this, this week is the 68th anniversary of the Hindenburg going down in 1937, over there in Lakehurst, New Jersey, I believe.
If Dave's going to do a joke with the words going down in it, you know it's a Monica joke. Hey, Dave, it's 2005. Monica was 1998. Are you trying to get Dennis Miller's job? That's a 7-year-old joke, Dave. Can't you do any better than that? Doesn't your audience deserve better? Doesn't CBS deserve better? Fire those stupid writers. Can't you get it? Go borrow Dennis Miller's old writers. Surely they're cheaper than what you're paying. If you're going to be doing decades-old jokes, you might as well be saving money on the writers, Dave.
All right, I know why you're in a good mood tonight. You saw that Bush press conference last night, huh? Did you see him at the end of it? He said, I don't want to cut into some of these TV shows that are getting ready to air. And he literally went off the air so that Paris Hilton's reality show could go on. Talk about a contrast. A dizzy socialite trying to function in a real job, and then Paris Hilton's show. What a peckerwood. He is just the funniest president.
Yes,
is he not? I mean,
I think, you know what I think? What I find interesting about our president, he inadvertently does Sammy Davis Jr. And it's because his eyes are very close together. So he'll say things like, we were trying to search in Africa for uranium. You know, so he might as well go, you know, I find that this budget is more affordable.
I want to be with you.
And the joke of it is, the shame of it is, he's spending all the money and we're all to be.
You are listening to Bart Cop Radio at bartcop.com. The Hammer of Truth.
Well, there you had it. Show 75, our big diamond anniversary show. I hope you liked it. And for the first time at the close of a show, I'm not going to get directly to work on the next show because, as you might have heard, we were given a trip to the Hawaiian Islands. So we're going to take those 8-9 days off. I'm going to come back all refreshed and ready. Should be double funny when I get back. While we're gone, however, We will be doing a little bit of blogging. So instead of going to barkup.com, you might think about going to blog.barkup.com. I'm sure while we're gone, the Bush monkey will be causing unnecessary deaths and spending unnecessary billions on his friends, so we'll be commenting on that. We just won't be giving you the full major page every day. But I would like to thank the subscribers and the people that drop the occasional check in the mail. Help us keep the page going. Help us keep the radio going. So thanks again to you subscribers and supporters. I'm going to let you go now. We'll see you in the next show, and I'll have a bunch to tell you about. This is Bart and K-Drag. I'm out of here. And please, Lord, a little more heat, please.
There's a man we all know who looks like his dad. He's got lots of dough. He comes from Texas. And he runs the show. He's got more money than you'll ever see. That's why he wants the presidency. To stretch that almighty dollar from sea to shining sea. Not religious, he's just putting his faith in the Lord. Hey, why take chances when you're after your final reward? Pain has made him successful, then hell, I'll give it a try. So I'm praying, I'm praying, I'm praying up through the sky. I'm praying, I'm praying. George Bush to die. I don't really want him to die now. It's a joke. He's got rich friends waiting at home. They know what they want. They know who they own. Why pay a tithe when you can pay for the throne? 'Cause ruling the world's a numbers game. Just ask the meek and the sick and the lame. 'Cause they can't get past the guards down on Country Club Lane. He says he's got compassion as much as money can buy. Don't hold your breath while you're waiting for the pigs to fly by. Love and praise and innocence are like the presidency. The more you pay to get them, the less that they need. You're an inmate waiting on death row. It might be youthful indiscretion. Well, what that means, nobody knows. It must be the savings and loan that he put up his nose. He says he's ready to lead us at much more than 10 cents a dance. Who's really paying the tune while we watch?
one more section to today's Bart Cop Radio Show 75 Diamond Anniversary Edition. Kelly did her La Perspective film bit to open section 4. And to be honest with you, it made me a little dizzy. So I wasn't sure what to do with it. Spoke to Mrs. Bart and she asked how many of the Bart Cop listeners were men and women. Told her I had no idea. And she said, well, it is kind of a women's issue. I think you ought to leave it in there. So here is Telly's La Perspective film.
Hey, kids. I want to apologize for missing the past few shows, and this week I need to get personal and talk about life in the new America. To be specific, Tally's life in the stress lane in the new America. As some of you know, I recently produced, directed, and performed in a Shakespeare festival that took up a great deal of my time. But that was the good part. Some of you may also remember that I lost my job as a QA software test engineer back at the end of 2003. Several months before that, I had a long-term relationship end. My ex had no credit, so in the 5 years we were together, all the credit card debt we accrued because of his golf habit, travel habit, and inconsistent employment was in my name. When he left, I had $45,000 worth of debt I was trying to pay off by myself. It had originally been $60,000, but together with his help, I managed to get it down. We split over money. He wanted to get a new five wood and a putter, but I said we needed that $850 to go towards rent. That was the final fight. I have to be honest, I was staying to get help to pay off the bills. The relationship was dead, and I knew it. I just didn't want to destroy my credit by having to file bankruptcy. But that is no reason to stay in an unhealthy relationship. After almost 6 months of being on unemployment, selling most of my belongings on eBay, and realizing my job class had gone permanently overseas unless I learned programming language and then agreed to make 75% less than a programmer, I decided to have some elective surgery on my eyes, even though I had lost my health insurance, that I hoped would make me more marketable in the acting field where I've always gotten the odd job since I was a kid. Well, the surgery didn't heal as expected, and I've been on disability ever since. A few months ago, I came to the realization that my ex was never, ever going to help me with the debt we owed, and since I never see a penny from him, I also realized that after paying on the bills by myself for the last 2 years, I had made absolutely zero dent in the debt, while my creditors were increasing my interest rates, not because I was late, because I am always uber early and have great credit, but because the low rates I had managed to get to hopefully get rid of my debt were slowly dissolving away due to the rise in interest rates on my variable rate accounts. Common sense said that if I didn't declare bankruptcy now before the GOP gets their new rules in place, I might not ever be able to. I was very reluctant to do this. Felt huge amounts of guilt and thought I was a complete failure until Tommy pointed out that most Americans' reasons for filing bankruptcy were the loss of a job, divorce, or insurmountable medical bills. So far, I had had 2 out of 3 and had no alternative. Shortly after filing, I went to have my annual mammogram, 4 months late because I had only recently found a basic health insurance plan that I could afford. Later the same day, they called to tell me they wanted to do more imaging of my left breast. I tried not to panic, and a week later I went in for more imaging and an additional ultrasound. Nothing gives you confidence like getting more radiation shot into your breast tissue. They found a mass that they thought was a cyst, but wanted to biopsy it to make sure. So, Monday, I went in for a core needle ultrasound-guided biopsy. They shot my breast full of lidocaine and then stuck a thick needle into it to get 5 core samples to test. They had a hard time getting the needle into the mass, which they said was a good sign. Cancer is hard, apparently, but but is easier to biopsy. I tried my best to be positive. At one point, I felt blood running down my side. The doctor had hit a vein. In the end, they put two Steri-Strips, a large gauze bandage, and a cold pack on the incision, and I was ordered not to remove them until they fell off and to ice the area once an hour for 15 minutes. There was already a large black and blue hematoma forming on the surface, like I needed a cheap ruse to get people to stare at my cleavage. They sent me home with an extra cold pack and bandage in case the bleeding didn't stop, and a booklet on breast cancer. In case of intense pain, I was to call them immediately, and I should hear from my doctor by Wednesday with the results. Let me tell you, it was a very, very long 2 days. You try not to go to the dark place, but it's inevitable. It's a type of self-preservation in a way. You prepare yourself for the worst in case it happens. You're not thrown into total shock and then think you'll be ready to handle bad news. Not that you can ever be ready. But if it's good news, then it's time to party. Other than dying or losing a breast, I was also terribly afraid of the bankruptcy trifecta I was about to hit, in that I would also have insurmountable medical bills because the plan I currently have is so basic, they only cover generic drugs, and there is a $1,500 deductible along with covering only 80%. And while 80% is good, 80% of cancer treatment is more than I would be able to pay. And my bankruptcy had already been filed, so financially, I'd be back at square one. Weird where your mind goes. I phoned my doctor first thing Wednesday morning to ask what time of day they normally get results like that. The receptionist informed me that they normally don't get here anything in less than a week, but I'd gone to a different breast center than the one they normally use since it's closer to me, and she called to check and found the results were already waiting on their fax machine. Good news! Only a fibroid cyst. Nothing to be done. Perfectly normal. Woo! So, what did I learn? I have to say that this experience has completely changed the food chain of important things in my life. I could be blind from my earlier surgery. I'm not. Disability pays more than unemployment. I will find a new vocation for a day job someday. I don't know if it will be famous novelist, wedding videographer, screenwriter, artistic director of the Wynn Performing Arts Center, if Steve can ever stop opening casinos every few years and widen his horizons to include Shakespeare, or even a steady voiceover gig. Anyone got one of those they want to throw me? Please? I also have the most wonderful friends and live with the most amazing man on the planet. This week I celebrate my birthday, and having a giant pseudo-hickey on my boob could not be a better present. Now, if I can just find some of those new dark chocolate M&Ms, life would be damn near perfect. That's all for this week. I'm Tally, and this has been La Perspective Bomb.